This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 26, recorded on May 19th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live on Ustream from the Average Guy Studios in Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted with show notes each week at theaverageguy.tv. You can contact the show at podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Follow us on Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast, or you can follow me and get updates on Twitter, follow at Jay Collison. Joining me tonight are some of the regulars and some old friends. First, I have Christian Johnson. Christian is the administrator and all things brilliance behind biosmods.com. Christian, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys.
Good to see you. And how's your week been?
It's been pretty tough. I had a lot of rough drafts and final papers to get in for school because I'm exempting some of my final exams, which means they want final papers. And I've been doing some driving and trying not to run some red lights. So it's been a busy week.
Well, good for you. And school wraps up here
June 8th.
All right, so you are on the downside.
Counting the days down.
Yeah, I bet you are. And I know you got a lot of tech work lined up for the summer, so I'm sure you're anxious to get to it. So good to have you tonight. Also joining us tonight, John Zadler. John is a co-host with me over at the homeservershow.com, and will come in from time to time to join us on the Home Tech Podcast. John, how are you tonight?
Hey, Jim, doing good. Have a good week and all that stuff. Yeah.
Always good to have you, John. Thanks for joining us in a pinch.
Sure. Anytime.
You bet. Also joining us tonight and kind of one of the rotating guests that we have out there. We call him Geek Accountant over at the Home Server Show, but he is to everybody else. He's Mike Howard. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great, Jim. We've had a wonderful week of weather here. For hot south, it's been highs in the upper 50s, low 60s. Great week.
Yeah.
Bring it over here.
Yeah. Has it not been nice in Buffalo, Christian?
It's been weird. It's been raining and like yucky 50s for 1 week. Then you get like 1 6-hour period of sunlight and high 70s, and then it's back to the same drill again.
Yeah. It's not unusual for us to be in the 90s this time of year, so low 60s is awesome.
Kind of nice. You know, the other night I was out. It was probably, I don't know, 9 o'clock maybe, full moon. It was 60 degrees, no wind. It was beautiful here. Beautiful. And I said, this is as good as it gets in Omaha, because we're fixing to get about as hot as you, Mike, here in a month or two. And then, of course, we get the snow and the cold that you guys don't get. So
yeah, we'll pay for this later on.
Yeah. John, there's just always snow on the ground up there, right?
Well, the past week it's been raining on and off, and so that's not fun. You know, if you're walking outside on the grass or whatever, it's all like muddy and stuff. So it's like, come on, where's the sun?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, at least we're not like Andrew, right? They're going into their winter in Australia, right?
They are going into their winter. Speaking of Andrew, he's a little late. I'm going to bring him in here in a second, and so we'll pick him up in just a moment. He's ready to go. Mike, I'm going to get you started. You wanted to kick the show off with some discussion around document management. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I spend a lot of my time, I scan all my bills in, I scan all the auto records in, I scan all those, and I store them on my home server. You know, so I scan them in, it automatically saves them to the home server, I rename them. There's a little bit of manual work associated with that, but I've been doing that. I have all my records scanned since 1999. Although I'm about a year behind, I've got a stack of, things ready to be scanned that I haven't done yet. Mike looks like he's reaching over for his stack. Yeah.
This was yesterday.
Wow. Yeah. So, so I'm a little bit behind. Mike, you've done some work on that. Kind of walk us through, maybe the way you do it and what you've got set up to talk about.
Yeah, Dave, Jim, you hit on one of the key things, the renaming. Scanning is easy. I just showed you a stack of, about a foot high of paper that I scanned yesterday. The scanning part is easy. You do have to have a scanner, and there's several choices there you can get. You can get a SnapScan scanner from Fujitsu that are excellent scanners. I don't think they're Twain compliant, so there's that issue. Whether they talk with other software or not. And then there's scanners like the Epson Pro GTS50 scanner, which is a document feeder scanner. You want a document feeder scanner. You don't want a flatbed. You get a flatbed, you'll quit doing this pretty quickly.
Yeah, I started that way with a flatbed.
Yeah.
And you can't, yeah, you're right. You can't do one at a time. You got to have that sheet feeder to make it work.
It is absolutely painful to do this with a flatbed. I wouldn't even try it. So you need some kind of document fed scanner. And I guess you could start off with one of those all-in-one printers that you have that can do printing, faxing, scanning, copying. Those, if you're going to be doing a lot, that's not going to be a good thing to do either. You're going to want a dedicated sheet fed scanner, and you get a bunch of choices there. You can go with, like I said, the Fujitsu SnapScan line. There's a lot of them you can choose from there. I have a small travel one that is held up pretty well. I've run about 12,000 documents through it. It's held up pretty well. So you can go with that. You can go with the Epson line that has some excellent ones, or there's another one that is like an all-in-one, both the hardware, the scanner, and the software, and that's from NeatDesk. You've probably seen ads from those guys, NeatDesk.
Mike, you've got an HP 7310 right behind you, though.
I do.
And that's got a sheet-fed scanner.
It does.
Associated with it. Would you use this something like that? I have the 7410 model of that, so Andrew would be happy that I've got the HP scanner, but do you use that to scan?
I do not, because that is just not as good. I'm using, people in chat can't see, but I'm using this little thing right here.
Okay.
It's a little SnapScan scanner that is a travel one. It can travel with you.
Okay.
And it's not the fastest, but it'll do it pretty fast. You know, I can run a lot through there. And I would probably, if I was getting one today, I'd look at either the Epson Pro GTS50. Epson Pro GTS50. It'll be in the show notes, I think. Or the SnapScan S1500. Both of those are bigger sheet fed scanners that you can run quite a bit through there.
When you got one of those portable scanners.
Yeah, I got one of the small ones.
Mike, that works for you, right? Because do you take it from place to place and scan different things? Or is it just convenient to have a small one?
It, for me, it was two reasons I went with the smaller one. One, my desk is cluttered as it is. I wanted to save desk space, so I wanted the smaller one. So I can fold it up really good. Y'all saw it in a folded up standpoint. It then unfolds to allow paper to stack up against it. Plus, it was cheaper. It was around $239, I believe, for the version I got. I got the SnapScan S1300. So it was around $239. When you're looking at the Epson one I was talking about, the Pro GTS50, or the SnapScan S1500, both of those are going to be in the $350 to $400 range. So those can handle a lot better paper, but they're going to be a little bit more expensive. And if I was getting one today, I would go that route. Now, I mentioned the NeatDesk, which is the all-in-one. It has decent software. It has a decent scanner, and you've probably seen commercials for that one. That one's going to run around $350, $400 too, and it's all in one. That's not the route I'm going to go personally. One, I wanted to test software before I used it. The SnapScan I had, and I think a lot of these come with software themselves. But Jim, you keyed on one thing that caused me to stop doing this, or always backed me up. I would scan a bunch of these things and have them sitting there waiting on my desk, because I was always fighting, do I scan and then rename and then scan and rename, or do I scan a whole stack of them and then rename a whole stack of them?
Right, and there's little tricks that I played with on that. So I would pull all the bills out that were single pages, right?
Yep.
And the HP software does it all for me. So I would set the mark to say scan as individual pages. And then I could get a whole bunch of those done in it. You know, they would maybe run 20 pages at a time, and then I'd rename them. And then if it was multi-sheet, I would just run the multi-sheet. It would hit the storage device, and I'd just rename it at that point. And,
right.
And Mike, speaking of renaming, let me let the folks know Andrew's joined us, and he is live. Andrew, how are you doing this evening?
Good, guys. Good. I've managed to find a quiet meeting room at the office, so there might be a little bit of background bit of background echo, I think.
No sweat. Thanks for making the effort to join us from the office, and it's good to have you tonight.
It's incredible. I've actually got a good video stream for a change.
Yeah, we don't see you, but you must not have your camera with you, right?
Yeah, I don't have my camera. Okay. That's right. Oh,
perfect. All right. Well, you sound great, so thanks for the good bandwidth there at work.
Yeah, awesome. Good.
Anyways, Mike, back to you. Keep going.
Yeah, so I wanted to try out several different softwares to find which one I want. The one that came with the SnapScan was causing me to have to rename everything. It was slow. It just wasn't what I was looking for. So when I started looking around, it looked like there's two different ways you can go with this. Basically, is some of them put your images into a database, let's say an SQL or MySQL or something like that database. And there's advantages to that. There's disadvantages. Some of the advantages are you can index them, and they can be multiple ways you can find them. You know, just like if you ever dealt with a database, you can have them tagged with different tags and find them that way. The downside is now they're inside that database, and sometimes it's proprietary, and it's going to be a problem if you want to get it out. Or if something gets corrupted with that database, you know, you could have an issue. Or there's the route where it just saves it in folders. And that's ultimately the way I'm going to go, where it just saves it in folders. But that's something that it helps to be able to use these things yourself, because, you know, another hobby of mine is photography, and the workflow of working through your image, your scans, renaming them, putting them into folders. That whole workflow is maybe different for how I want to use it versus the way you want to use it, Jim. So it's good to try these things out first. So a number of them I tried had a free trial where you can use them. And I use a program called File Center, a program called Docs Vault, and a program called eDoc Organizer. And before that, I was using something from Digital Archound that worked with the Windows Home Server that had a nice interface on the Windows Home Server. The two I wanted to try, I didn't end up trying, was Paperport and Page Manager, which I think are some of one of the better selling ones. But they did not have a free trial. They had a money back guarantee, which I was not going to do that.
And what was the retail on those? 50 or 100 bucks?
I think they're closer to 100, but I'm not sure. Yeah, except for File Center, the I'm going to get to it in a second. The one I picked, picked the one that's the most expensive.
Yeah, they typically run around $100 to $300.
Yeah, and most of them had a varied thing. You had like a pro version, and you had a lower end version. And a lot of times that difference was due to, you know, whether it had a high accuracy OCR scanner, you know, optical character recognition scanner, whether it had whatever other features it might have had for handling the scans. The one I decided on is File Center. And it is not a database one. It usually puts everything into a folder structure. And the key there for me was the renaming. You know, I showed you that stack of about a foot high of paper that I scanned yesterday. If I look in there, I probably have in the inbox of File Center 820 images that I'm going to have to rename. So that's a lot. I mean, to rename 820 images the way I was doing it would take me forever. But what this allows you to do is you can set up templates, renaming templates. So it the way it organizes it is it thinks of it in like a file cabinet. So you have a file cabinet, which is your top level folder. You have a drawer, the drawer of the file cabinet, which is your next level folder. And then you have the files, and that's your next level of the tree there. And you organize your stuff in that way. So I have like a bills drawer, or file cabinet, I should say. I have a bills file cabinet. I have a financial, a health, and so on. And then you have an inbox. So everything I scan goes into this inbox. And as I take something and just drag it into where it's going to go to, it then automatically renames it. There is some give and take with that. At first, I wanted, let's say you got your credit card bill and you receive one every month. So I would have credit card, the name of the credit card, is another level, the year is another level, and then the month is another level. And that just got too chaotic for me, so I just went back to the year. Because in reality, if I'm wanting to look up the statement for April 2010, heck, I'll just go to 2010 and I'll have 12 of them to choose from.
Well, you have to – it'll show you the image then?
It will. It shows you a thumbnail.
Okay. So you don't necessarily try and rename all those files with the date in it of the statement.
I have chosen not to do that. Okay. Because what I can do is I can just drag them into that year.
Right.
It'll rename them. In my case, the way I have it set up, it'll say, you know, credit card dash, you know, Chase dash, and then the year.
And then the year. And then the viewer is good enough that you can go in there and all you would have is 12 to go through
exactly.
To find the right month that you're looking for, right?
Exactly.
And then does it give it some kind of a unique identifier on the end to to make sure it's unique from the you know the name the naming convention it automatically selects.
Right. If you're doing it the way I'm doing it, you're going to want to do that. It has in your when you're setting up the naming conventions, that's something you can choose. Is you can choose to have a number at the end of it that's going to scale up every time you put another one in there. I also attached the date that the file was created to the name of it, so that would be somewhat unique too.
Right.
And it also OCRs all the images as it comes in. So it will take those PDFs, it creates a PDF, and then it creates into a searchable PDF.
How have you seen that OCR, the quality of that OCR? I was doing that early on with some embedded HP software. No offense, Andrew, and it wasn't working very well. It was guessing what some things were, and it was changing the fonts in the PDF to try and make it match. And maybe it was a setting that I had wrong, but I felt like it was changing data on me. And so I shut it off, and I said, I just want the PDF. I don't want you to try and recognize any of the fonts in there.
Yeah, I have not come across where it changes the data. It should not, I would not like that. No, it should, maybe it should just interpret it wrong, but not actually change the data.
And maybe it wasn't, but I just saw it for the first time and it didn't look right. I mean, it was obvious it misspelled, it recognized it and misspelled it. And I thought, oh, nah, I can't have this. I just at that point, I shut it off and I never went back to OCR again.
So in the case,
that's what was.
Here's my practical.
That's always a challenge, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. What? One sec, Christian. Go ahead.
See, here's my practical application for you, Mike. Okay, so my project at the end of the year is always this laborious ritual of scanning, and the way it normally works is I have a Brother network printer that has the document feeder. So I have here for our fellow members, unfortunately you streamers don't get access to this. This is probably 50% of one subject. I've gotten the first 50% accomplished. I still have 50% more of this, and this is for one subject, so multiply this by 8 subjects. And now you know how much I need to scan in at the end of the year so I can recycle all these papers. So the way I do it is I take a stack into the document feeder, and with the software that I get with the network panel, I can scan all the documents duplex and it throws them into a PDF. So I normally put 2 chapters together. So let's say I covered 25 chapters in AP Euro this year, and I put I group them in groups of 2 chapters that I scan in the document feeder. Then it finishes the scan, and then I get those entire 2 chapters in one PDF file that gets saved to my hard drive. Is there an easier, more logical way of organizing that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you want to organize that differently. How else would you like to organize that?
Well, see, one of the things I don't like about the Brother printer is that, let's say I have like 40, 50 documents and I get like 45 out of the 50 in. If something gets jammed, which sometimes happens because the papers get crinkly and stuff, then I clear the jam, reset the scanner feeder, and then it makes me do all the 45 over again that I've already done. Like, it didn't save those initial 45 pages, and it literally drives me up a wall, because I've literally been like at least 4 times this week where I've gotten to page 49 out of 50, it jammed up, and then I had to start the same stack over again. So one thing I'm thinking is, is there some software that like kind of scans and saves as it goes? And is there like this, what I'm looking at here, the file cabinet file center thing, tells me it splits PDFs and all this great stuff, which I would like, because I can't, it's kind of frustrating not to have like a drag and drop kind of view of the PDF before you save it. Cause this thing just saves it once the scan is successful. But if the scan fails, you got to do it all over again.
Yeah. You hit on a couple key things there. One is, no scanner is going to be foolproof. They're all going to jam from time to time. So you're going to have issues like that where you're scanning and the scan doesn't, part of it is successful, part of it's not. Typically what I've done, if I've got a large scan, is I'll break it into smaller scans, but then you've got the problem of, I really want just one file, or I want the file separately. So you want a piece of software, and File Center will do that. There's 2 versions of File Center. The home use one, which I do not think has that, and then the pro version, a more expensive one that has it, where you can take your those two PDFs or 10 PDFs, however many it is, and make them into one PDF. You can reorganize the pages. So let's say the, a page in the middle messed up. You can rescan that one and stick it in the middle if you want to. You can reorganize that. You can combine files into one. Sometimes, a lot of times I'll get them and they're rotated wrong. You know, you can rotate them and resave it. You know, all that stuff you want to be able to do to your PDF, especially with large scans like you have. If you've tried it, the scanner just keeps jamming. Then the solution is to scan a smaller number of pages.
Right, which, you know, it's weird because, you know, it's not like I can do, like, for my purposes, like I said, I group it in two chapters. So it's like, well, whatever was part of that chapter is, you know, what the size determines, which is normally anywhere from 30 to 50 pages per file.
You also have the reverse of that sometimes is where, let's say I've got my gas bill, my electric bill, and I haven't scanned them. I'm way behind, and I've got 2 years worth of them. I can scan them one at a time and have each one of them create a separate file. I can go through and change the settings on my scanner and tell it that every two pages create another file. That's one way, and that works fairly well. Or in File Center, what I can do once it gets in there, I just right-click on it and say break, you know, unstack, and tell it every two pages to create another file, and it, bam, we'll split that up into multiple pages based on what I said. What you want to do there, though, is you want to make sure all your scans that you're doing are the same number of pages. So you wouldn't want to have in the same stack a three-pager, a two-pager, or a five-pager, because then unstacking them is going to be difficult.
You know, wouldn't this be a nice application for Microsoft Surface? So you scan these in, and then you've got a big table surface where these scans appear as pages, right? And this would be one of those nice applications where using hand gestures across the screen would make sense. So I'm gonna blow this up. I'm going to take a look at it. I'm going to bring it down. I'm going to combine it with two pages. I want these front and back. Okay, and then slide that off. Now save that over in this folder, right? I mean, this is where Surface, which to date has really gotten no traction in the consumer market, right? Nobody has a tabletop display yet for the most part. We don't see those. But that'd be a great one. Andrew, we interrupted you a second ago. What did you need to say?
I can't remember now.
must have been a lie. Sorry about that. John?
No, that's all right. Go on.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I know in the enterprise space, I mean, we do a lot of business process outsourcing. So, you know, we used to process mortgages for one of the larger banks here. And, you know, I think at the enterprise level, they kind of struggle because everything has to go back through manual review. And, you know, I don't think even those teams use OCS to convert their content. I think they just do the pure scan of to a PDF or a JPEG or a TIFF or whatever it is that they happen to be using and, you know, do it that way. I mean, I don't know. I tend to be a bit of a heretic. We don't even scan anything. We've still got filing cabinets at home.
Yeah. Well, the advantage to OCR, right, is that that all becomes data that can be searchable. So
absolutely.
You could go back in and do that. John?
Yeah, Jim, well, the first thing I was going to say was the what you're talking about, that Surface scan. Like, you watch Hawaii Five-O? They got one of those tables.
I'm sure they do, and they have it on HDIS.
NCSLA.
NCSLA does that, yeah, you bet.
But the other thing I was going to say, Mike, is I like to use that for the Windows Home Server we had mentioned before, is the Document Manager, DA 20, I think it's 2010, so it's last year's model. So, and it does some of the stuff that you brought up there where you said, like, you know, let's say you scan a bunch of documents and then let's say that you scan 20 sheets, right? And then you could say, okay, break that up. Or you might want to keep that as, like, that's it. Let's say that's a report, you know, so it's, let's say it's 20 sheets. You want to always keep that intact, those 20 sheets, wherever you move them, they're always, you know, kept together. So it has that option. It has the option to break them up. It has the option to, you can tag. You'll see, like, little icons at the bottom and as you highlight over them, it's, you know, it'll show them to you on the screen in the larger size. So you can say, yes, okay, this is, you know, I want this document, that. You can randomly pick the documents you want and then say, okay, that will be one group. And then you can also play around with, like you were saying, you also mentioned rotation. You know, so let's say, you know, you might want to say, okay, oh, this one was scanned and upside down. I'd like to rotate it and stuff like that.
Right.
So I like those little options that in that software. It's not it's not like a big type of program like you're saying with the file center there, but it's neat to see that some of the points that you brought up, I see that in this software.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I can't remember if that one has it, but a lot of these have a trial, and I would suggest, you know, trying it out, because what the workflow that works for me may not work for somebody else. So you really, it helps if you can run a few scans through yourself and see how it's going to work. Somebody may like to have the database version, you know, of one of these. Mm-hmm. I like to have the individual files. You know, Jim, you were talking about OCR, and Andrew, we are about to buy OCR at my office. We just started a document management project at my office, and we're about to buy Kofax, which I believe is the top of the line OCR thing for industry. And even those guys aren't 100%, and they can't. None of them can scan handwriting. You know, they can scan it, but they can't OCR handwriting. So if you're wanting to OCR handwriting, that's just never going to work. So it's machine print is the only thing that you can really get any kind of accuracy on. And you're never going to get as good as what you get with an enterprise level OCR engine. But I will tell you that FileCenter has two different OCR engines. One is their standard and one is their what they call high accuracy. And so I tried both of them because if I didn't have to use the high accuracy one, it was a little cheaper. And I did find the higher accuracy one was better. You know, one of the things, and while I can't ever think of a time when I've needed to do this, I like the idea I could if I wanted to. You know, when you scan in, let's say your bank statement, you have checks in there. You know, so I scan it all in together. And I'm not going to index each one of these checks. This was a check 1726. But if I ever want to find this check, I can use the search feature. And because I used OCR in it, it'll find check number 1726 for me.
Wow.
And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really handy.
Of course, it'll find every other document that had 1726 on it. But, you know, somewhere in that stack of things it finds is that check.
That's cool. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you put, Mike, if you put your account number, I mean, does it recognize the MICR labels on the bottom of the check as well? Do you know, does it see those as numbers?
I have not checked that, but of course, if I was really searching for that check, I would limit the search to just like my banking folder or something like that. I wouldn't search everything else, which would help narrow it down to that. I've also, you search when you scan your credit card bill, there's all kind of crazy small print writing on the back of it that I'm sure I'm agreeing to give them everything I own if I don't pay. I've searched for a word that's on the back of that to see if it'll find it, and it finds it. So it's been pretty good. Now, if you wrote your name or wrote stamp something on over a number, it's probably not going to find that. So it's not 100%.
I have a question because I remember one time installing Office and 2010. And, you know, like the big package Office, I don't know if it was professional or whatever it was called. And there was something in there that they mentioned OCR. So I was wondering if anybody knows, what is that? Is that their own software? Is that something that links their documents to an OCR software? Does anybody have any input on that one there in Office 2010? Have you seen that functionality?
I do not.
What's the name of it again, John?
Well, it's when you go in and set up Office 2010 Professional.
Right.
One of the options is like that's it. It allows you to also install SharePoint, get something to do with SharePoint. But then they say something about OCR. And I was like, wow, you know, like what's going on there? What? How is that? How do they use that? How does that function? That option. I've never got into it.
Yeah, well, I know, part of SharePoint is that they have, document sharing and integration, but I haven't seen that before. If I go to my shared documents link and open things up, I see the different formats and file types for the, Word, Excel, and whatever. And with Office 2010 apps, I can open those right in the browser, but I can't do anything with OCR from what I can see.
Okay.
So for me, one of the things, sorry, Andrew, do you have something?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I think the OCR ties in with the, what is it, the Office image viewing module. So I think if you open a document in the, what's it called? Here we are. The Office Picture Manager, I think you can do OCR from within that. If you've got a scanned document, I think. We've been looking at it with a customer, but I'm not quite sure how it works.
It's just a picture, so I imagine it's just built in the technology so that it can try and recognize characters. By the way, for those keeping score at home, optical character recognition, that's OCR.
Yeah. And for me, let me just say before we move on, the workflow was important for me. So I was stacking up. You saw the thing I had there. I'm way behind on my scanning. So for me, the workflow, I want to get rid of all this paper. So once I get through it, the workflow is going to be I scan. It goes into the inbox of File Center, and then I shred the original. So now I've got the only copy is in here in File Center. I keep it in the inbox until I have used it, you know, whatever I'm going to do with it, pay the bill, put it into Quicken, whatever. And then once I've used it, I'll drag it into the place it's going to end up being in. And when it drags in there, it'll rename it. And I have templates of – you know, probably a half dozen different naming themes that I can use. So, you know, you can set all these up to name them the way you want to. And as you drag them in there, it'll rename them. You can also, there's one other feature you can do is you can use scan sheets. So let's say you've got your power bill, your gas bill, your insurance bill, whatever else, you can have pre-printed scan sheets and you put them in there between each one of those documents and it will see that scan sheet. And when it sees it, it'll say, okay, this is your insurance bill. I'll move it to this folder and I'll name it this, whatever you've told it to do.
That's a good idea.
That's cool.
Yeah. So inside of all, let's say you stack 10 different types of things in there and you put a scan sheet in between each one of the scan sheets telling it what to name it and where to put it. And it will, of course, then delete the scan sheet. It doesn't see the scan sheet. And that was pretty cool.
Let me ask you this. Actually, I'm going to ask all you guys this. So, you know, what we're talking about here, Mike, is really kind of last century thinking, right? We get bills in the mail that are paper, yep. Right? And most organizations, most companies, even our power company, the cell phone, you know, these companies have offered me, they've all offered me e-bills, right? Get an email now with the bill in it. And so I could probably eliminate 90% of the paper that I'm scanning today by getting the e-bill. So the question I have for you guys, and I'll start with John. John, are you scanning at all, John?
Yeah, I scan. A couple, maybe about 10 sheets a month.
So do you trust your phone, power, cable company to keep those records for you where you would never have to scan them, but you could get access to them online?
Yeah, I would trust them because okay. I think if you know they want their money, they're gonna keep the documents.
Well, okay, but I mean, some folks don't. You feel like if they offered an adequate e-bill that you never had to get paper, you'd be okay just letting them keep it and getting an email and never getting the paper.
Yeah, I'm okay with that because okay. There's a few things I think we have with Canada Post there. They have some kind of email or something like that where they work with, let's say, some of these companies, and that's it. And you get, instead of getting it in the mail, right. the post office gets it, and then they – so that's it. And it's good because, right, what's nice about scanning documents and stuff like that is you can bunch it different ways. You know, you can say, show me everything that I bought this year, or show me everything that I – or like all the gas bills I paid for, the gas bills from this year to year. So, you know, you can like break things up instead of having to make take out the same documents and sorting them different ways. So what's nice is you can sort these. It's a sort function.
I like
that.
Right. Mike, obviously you're still getting paper bills of stuff.
I do. And I think if I was offered, and some places do offer me to give me the PDF or have it online, I would probably still, I would just replace the scanning part. I would download it and put it in File Center because I guess I'm just not trustworthy. I want it in my
I think it's a great server. Question. I mean, in the sense that it I have been I've been hesitant to switch over because I like to get the bill. It's the weirdest thing. I like to see it. I like to see it on paper. It's ridiculous. I'm digital everywhere else except I've got stacks and stacks, and then I have to take all this time to scan it in. I just need to take the stupid thing electronically. Christian, you're laughing at me, so you get this. But you're certainly not at the point, right, where you've got to manage a lot of bills and stuff. But as you think forward to what's going to be your preference as you start taking on some of these things?
Well, most of the billing that I do is done on Quicken, and it's charged directly to Quicken, and then it just automatically takes out and keeps track of your balances, and that ties into PayPal. So I like that.
Do you ever want the paper?
No.
Okay.
I mean, unless it was like you're buying this $200,000 house, sign here. I mean, obviously, I'd want the bill, you know. But no. But I mean, like electric, heating, and water, and all that stuff. That's automatically. Just directly, you know, it shows up in Quicken, and that's the end of it. And for PayPal, finally was able to get PayPal integrated into our Quicken account, so that all the copies of invoices I send to advertising partners, those invoices show up in Quicken, and all the copies of the current balances in my business PayPal account show up in the dad's Quicken. So that's okay. Kind of useful.
Yeah. So you're kind of a completely 100% digital from that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's easier to see relationships and spending, and where can I spend more? Where can I spend less? Where do I need to invest if I have a digital schematic of it, rather than saying, well, I got this paper over here, and if I do the long division for here, then this will tell me this. And,
easy,
you know, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, well, it's a difference in thinking.
Yeah.
I got everything in Quicken too.
Right. No, but Mike, you and I are, you know, well, I won't speak for you, but I'm probably, this is one area of my life that I'm probably a relic, in that I everything else in my life is digital, but I'm still struggling to make that conversion over of that paper. And make it work. Andrew, how do you guys manage the bills at your place?
We've got a two-drawer double width filing cabinet, and we use dividers.
Okay, so you're still
so there. We're in the same boat as you. We get our phone bills and Visa card bills and whatnot online through the bank.
Right.
But we also get a paper copy. So if the paper copy turns up late, then we work off electronic, but we leave them all on the bank. We can go back 7 years at any given point in time and pull a statement as a PDF.
Yeah, well, and banks are good enough, at least at this point now, I think, and trustworthy from keeping those records around. That I expect my bank to have a copy of my statement available to me going any length of time back. I mean, that's just kind of my expectation. But yet I still get those paper bank statements. I think it's just a change of mind. Anybody older than probably 30 at this point is going to need to kind of get out of that idea of I'll be honest, I'm afraid it's going to get lost in the email. So if they're sending me a bill via email, I don't treat my email like an inbox, like I would treat my mail, my physical mail, right? I don't look at everything. I just kind of scan through my email sometimes, and I was always afraid I would miss it in there. And then now everything's set up automatically. I mean, I literally don't ever have to schedule anything to be paid. It's all automatically paid.
And, you know, it's interesting too, because like with one of my advertising partners, I bill them every month with an invoice out of PayPal, but they always make me send email them a PDF copy of the invoice that they can print out. So obviously, even though the transaction is digital, they're still printing and keeping these paper copies. So.
Christian, it might be even worse. I bet they're printing it and rescanning it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I mean, but it's interesting to me. And, you know, maybe I just don't see it that way, but I just don't know why you would want all these file cabinets to have to hire people to keep maintained. I mean, that's just a lot of brute force.
It becomes part of a corporate process, right? I mean, that's the way they did it 15 years ago, and corporate processes are sometimes slow to change.
Right.
And so, Mike, I'm sure you see some of this in your accounting group.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why we took the initiative last year to look at document management for the office, was because, you know, it's taking up more and more and more space. And let's say you have a sales tax auditor come in that wants to see the invoices for everything you constructed in Alabama. Well, good God, that's going to take, you know, a staff to go pull tons of paper and make copies of that. We're never going to give the auditors the original, you know, give them all this paper. So if we went to document management, not only do we save the space, but retrieval is so much easier. You just go in and say, give me all the stuff for construction we did in Alabama, and bam, we got all these PDFs that we could just email to the you know, sales tax auditors. And unfortunately, sales tax auditors are looking for money all the time, so we see them quite often.
Yeah, it's good for them. John, you just sent us a document from the 2010 install.
Yeah, that's right. That was that's where I was showing it, where it, it shows you something about the OCR in Office 2010 Professional. So that's it. That was like what I was talking about before. How does that integrate? How do they use that in Office?
Well, I think so. It says allows you to easily perform optical character recognition and extract text from an image document. So I imagine if it's stored as an IMG, or I don't know what other file types might fit in, but it would allow you to pull text from those images that are stored in the Office photo, whatever they call it.
Interesting. That's nice. That's like Star Trek, man.
yeah. So I imagine that that's how that works. So any other feedback on that, Mike? Anything you want to close this discussion up with?
Yeah. One more thing as we're talking about all this is, you know, years ago when I was younger, my grandmother died and we went up to getting our house all ready, you know, getting everything together to give away. And we went up in the attic and found the attic absolutely filled with brown bag after brown bag of invoices, receipts, statements. She had a ledger for everything she had ever given everybody. And we thought, good God, that is just crazy. Yeah. So very often when I'm scanning these things, I wonder if I'm just a modern day version of her. Yeah, instead of having bags of the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of having bags, you've got digital bags.
Yeah. So I'm no better, just different.
Oh, my dad's like that. When my parents moved about, I think it was two houses ago, my dad had probably 15, 20 years worth of receipts for everything still in envelopes.
Yeah.
So I can totally relate to your situation, Mike.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Mike.
And every time I scan, I think, what am I doing here? But you know, there's been times when I've wanted to go back and look at that stuff. So I, you know, it is different.
It's the same thing I ask myself every time I download a song, right? I'm like, couldn't this just be in the cloud? And why am I storing this thing? You know, it could be accessible from anywhere. I ask the same question of the bills. Why not let the phone company, why not let the electric company store my bills for me on their, you know, on their site? And if I ever need it, because to be honest with you, I've never gone back and grabbed a phone bill, ever.
Well, at least emails, you know, at least we're not printing all our emails, right?
Yeah,
and then keeping a stack of emails. At least, you know, you could say, all right, I'll organize, I'll keep electronically, and that's it.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're right, John. Okay, well, Mike, thanks for bringing that in. That's a great, that's one of those great topics around home tech. I don't hear a lot of talk around that. We've talked about it on the Home Server Show through Digital Archound, and because John had tried that out, and he got me to try it out, but that's a great topic. If you've got other questions or thoughts around scanning and archiving, send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll bring that up and get that read online. All right, Andrew, you're in. You've got a couple things you want to go over, and let's do those now.
Oh, okay, helps if I don't talk to my mute button.
It happens.
Oh, what a noob. A couple of things that have come up in the news. I know we've talked about Facebook security a bit in the past. One of the things that came up this week was that Facebook have just introduced an option for two-factor authentication via SMS. So two-factor authentication is basically you connect to Facebook, log in as if you were going to do it normally, and then Facebook sends you a text message, which you then enter into a secondary password box so that it guarantees that you are who you are. Interesting that to me that Facebook is starting to get that level of security wrapped around it.
Well, I think they have to at some point. I mean, there's been so many problems with it.
Yeah, I sort of tend to think it's sort of almost starting to take away from it being a social media network.
Yeah. I don't know. Once you're logged in, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. You know, look at Dropbox, right? So Dropbox all of a sudden is starting to have some problems with its security statements that it's made. I've been a big proponent of Dropbox, and I have been, you know, I got our church using it. I got everybody around me using it, and then they kind of said, well, it's not really as secure as we told you it is. Yeah, it's encrypted, but employees have access to it, and you know, and a little bit of egg on the Dropbox face this week. I think Facebook's probably just trying to be above, because this is an option, right? You don't have to do it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I think they're just trying to probably be above reproach at this point. Say, you know what, we're going to nail this security thing, and if folks want ultra security, here it is.
Yeah, they may also be trying to get ahead of the curve too.
Sure.
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting though, because I mean we see a lot of two-factor in the enterprise, but you know it's the first social thing that I've seen it in so far.
Yeah. No, good stuff.
Yeah. And the other thing I found in my quest to find websites that either do useful things or useless things, I found a service this week called WiseStamp, which is an online email signaturing service that allows you to bring in dynamic content into your email signature. So you can pull in, say, your last tweet or the last thing you stumbled or, you know, items out of eBay. And it integrates as a Chrome, a Safari, and a Firefox plugin, I think. I don't think it supports IE yet. But then there's a whole bunch of applications online that it integrates with. So, you know, you can... you know, share out in your email signature what the last thing you listened to is, or, you know, the last lot of bookmarks in Delicious, which would be great for us if people could tag something for us.
Did anybody ever tag anything with the app tag?
No, I think...
we tried.
Yeah, we tried.
You know, Andrew, I was going to say, my brother did something like that with his signature. He sent me an email, and at the bottom, he's got like, you know, 6 or 7 icons there. It's like a whole, it's like, wow, what's with all the color, you know? And he has like a little guy at a computer, a little, you know, animated guy at a computer, and you highlight it, and then it gives like his email address. It gives him a bunch of information about him there. Then he's got some kind of GPS, like a logo of a GPS. You click on that, and then like Google Map pops up, and it shows where his location is. Another icon. You click on something. So it's all this like, and what's cool about it is because what he says is, what's neat is like, imagine now, okay, you have an email, and you put your location, right? Let's say your home address. But now the person has the email, and you know, 5 years later or whatever, let's say 6 months or a year later, he goes back to the email to find your address. Well, in a real email, basically your address is, you know, what you printed in the email. But in his case, what happens is you can have that 1-year-old email, you go click on his address where, you know, like the little map, and it goes to like a website, and it goes and gets the current address. So all this information is it's kept current, you know, if he moved wherever he is and stuff like that. So this is nice where you have this kind of, your flexibility now, where, you know, these little options that you can do in your signature and stuff like that. I know I play around with that. I have that Gravatar, you know, where how sometimes you can associate your name with an image and stuff like that. And that's cool. I'm sure people can take advantage of doing that on their signature and stuff like that. Good stuff.
Yeah, and I think I think this is a fairly similar service. I'd be interested to know which one your brother's using too, because to be able to feed that type of content dynamically is great. You know, if your IM addresses change, or you know you're selling something on eBay, or you know you switch a Skype account or something like that, just to be able to, you know, just push that out to people is good. Nice touch.
Do you find yourself going out and pulling data out of people's signatures?
I tend to pull it out and put it in Gmail, and then it syncs back down to my phone.
So it's kind of similar to like forum posts, like in the Home Service Show forums. You know, you see stuff off people's signatures. Some of them do enable HTML rendering, which makes a lot more capabilities for you, but. Doing that through email, is there any kind of incompatibility or risk there?
I think there's probably an inherent risk if you're pushing content that hasn't been sent, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends.
That'd be
the only concern. If the script is coming through Ystamp and it's their script, then it's probably fine. But again, I really don't know much about it.
You know,
I guess it's one of those things. If the stream can get compromised, then. I just got a tweet
just before the show. I was checking my mentions, and I just got a tweet that had somebody I didn't know, and then it had a shortened URL. And you know, you can hover it over it and kind of see where it's pointing you to. But I was a little suspicious. I imagine links inside of signatures could have some, you know, similar suspicions, so to speak. If the person doesn't know you, or I don't know. Andrew, when I first brought this site up, it looks a lot. I thought you'd directed me to Twitter, the Twitter front page. It looks very much like that. I mean, of course, after you look at it for a minute, you realize you're not. But it is very, very similar to Twitter in the way they have that laid out.
Yeah, see, that's what makes me think about. I know I use a gadget on my Windows 7 machine, and it's called TwitZ. So you know, that's it. It gives you like you know, let's say that's your friends or whatever, or they retweet from somebody else, and they give you some information. Then there's a link, and you know, when you go and you highlight, and it says, you know, bit.ly dot, and it gives you a bunch of characters. Like, you don't really know exact. You don't know what it is you're clicking on that link. So this is why sometimes it might bring you to a site that you don't want to go or whatever. So what's neat is in this program, when you highlight it, it actually writes, you know, what the real link is. So then you could see, oh, okay, that's whatever, Best Buy and stuff like that. Yes, I want to click on it or no. So this is what sometimes...
It extends the link before you get to it. Yeah, that, and then we touched on this last week or the week before, didn't we, Jim, sort of in the risk of the URL shortening services and the... You know, in the context of the YouTube one, and you know, all the sites that are trying to get rid of the .com and the like,
right?
You know, and you know, is there an inherent risk with, you know, the shortening service potentially directing people where they don't want to be?
Yeah, yeah. I think, guys, real quick, let's shut video down for a second. We keep dropping mic, so if I could have you guys turn off your video real quick, and we'll see if we can get mic back in. And that might help with our bandwidth. Mike did now is the call failed with him. Well, I'll keep trying. Andrew, anything else you want to cover on that?
No. That was about it for me. Just a few little curious things that I found around the web that people might like to have a look at. Yeah.
I love that feature, by the way. Thanks for bringing that in each week. You always bring a site. I mean, I'm around the web a lot in what I see, but you always find something I've never seen before. So
I appreciate I call them internet curios.
Yeah. No, I like it. I appreciate you bringing those in. All right, Christian, time for Christian's Corner.
Christian's Corner. All right.
Nice.
Here we go. interesting kind of going back on this, what's going to come out on top in terms of tablets. Tiger Direct is blowing away for $300 a ViewSonic G tablet. It's a 10.1-inch screen, got the Android 2.2, 1080p playback, which looks cool. So again, I'm just kind of trying to keep a lookout for prices and what kind of features are coming this way and stacking them up against the competitors. But it seemed to have pretty high ratings and a pretty reasonable price. So I think it's something worth checking out. Again, I haven't really played with Android tablets in extent, but it does look like it has a lot of the common features, and 1080p playback sounds pretty appealing if it actually works. So that would be interesting to see happen.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think, you know, I'm a little leery of any tablet that's not one of the mainline tablets at this point.
True. Well, yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be. I'm still kind of like, I look at this and I'm like, you know, maybe. Anyways, I would like to, and I'm not necessarily convinced I need a tablet at this point. I mean, I'm really enjoying my Android phone. But
right.
That is one thing. If I ever went to a tablet, I want to go into a store and grab it and touch it before I buy it. But for $300, that's not a bad. What version is that running, Christian?
2.2.
It's Froyo.
Yeah, so I'm guessing it would be an upgrade to 3 sooner or later.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, 3.1 or at least at some point. So cool. We'll get that thrown out there as the deal of the week.
All right, and for you IE9 early adopters. speed tip for you just to make sure it's actually working, because this is one of the huge features that isn't always enabled by default. So if you're open in the Internet Explorer 9 and you hit your Alt key, that'll bring up the toolbar. And if you click on Tools and go to Internet Options and then drag your way over to the Advanced tab, look at the very first checkbox that shows up and see if the checkbox is checked for use software rendering instead of GPU rendering. You want to make sure that is unchecked, because you don't want to have, if you have a nice graphics card, you don't want to be using software acceleration to generate that page, because the new feature of IE9 is the GPU acceleration. So.
All right. Sorry about that. I'm trying to get Mike back. We dropped him, and so I've been working to get him back. All right. What else you got for us, Christian?
Just some quick background on that. If you have a netbook and you're using shared graphics or integrated graphics, chances are you're probably going to want to stick to software rendering. But if you have something where it's like a ATI or NVIDIA card, stick to the GPU rendering.
Is there is there a memory amount that I should be looking for, 512 and above, or does that matter, or is it just
no GPU? I would just say, as long as you either have a really good shared graphics card or you're on a desktop, you're probably fine.
Okay.
That's probably the rule of thumb.
Yeah.
And my little news clip of the week is Facebook finally got it's been about 4 years now. They got a tag patent. They got a patent for tagging photos and digital media in general. So now it's like these other applications that are similar to it. Well, are they going to be violating this patent that Facebook holds? Which is, the patent itself states that Facebook created the idea and has exclusive uses to tagging digital media. So other things like Flickr and that, are they going to be in the line of fire from this patent?
Yeah, or at least have to license that technology, right, in the future. Right. So now, is that the same tagging that's inside Microsoft's photo gallery, that if I'm on the desktop and I load all my pictures into it, it starts going through trying to find faces and it asks me, whose face is this? And it,
right.
Is it same thing? Although that's at the desktop level.
Right. Like, I don't know if it's like, yeah, I don't know if it's like you hover your mouse over the person and it shows the tag. I don't know if that's the technology they are crediting for, or whether because apparently it's a specific part of the tagging process that they now have credit for. So it'll be interesting to see if anything, because like, Apple went buck wild over suing these other companies for the trademark App Store. So while I don't think Facebook is about to do anything like that, will these other companies be violating that initial patent?
Yeah.
And another cool thing is, keeping with the mobile and the tablet stuff, is that the HP Pre 3 is now listed as a pre-order on Amazon. So it's showing a European price for it right now of $449, so about $500 US. 640 US.
Yeah.
But that has the 1.4 gigahertz Qualcomm processor. So this is also claiming 720p video and some other features. But I'm also keeping an eye out for this new, I think it's going to be another HTC that's on its way. That is actually a dual-core Snapdragon processor, which has to be lightning fast for a mobile phone.
And battery-consuming, I'd imagine.
Right, yeah, that's interesting. I actually haven't seen much data on how these things stack up battery life. Yeah. But I mean, the Evo 4G is a 1-gig Snapdragon. So,
well, and some, I mentioned that the other day to somebody, and they said actually the dual-cores can be a little more efficient.
Yeah,
with their battery usage, so maybe that will extend the battery life.
So. Yeah, no, so that's pretty interesting.
Hey, on this Pre that you saw, is the same form factor that the Pre 1 and Pre 2 were, or is that getting bigger?
No. It's got the 800 by 480 resolution, so it's a 36 inch screen. So okay. I don't know if that's worth the
fairly one similar. Might be a little bit larger.
Yeah,
I'd have to take
kinda,
a look at that.
Yeah, kind of like the BlackBerry style keyboard flip out. And
loved that. I really did like that implementation of that keyboard. It was a one hand keyboard flip, and you could really one hand it. The Epic that I have now is a two hander. Not as convenient in the car. When not that I ever text while I'm driving. Just when I go on the record as saying I never text while I drive.
Yeah.
Oh, bummer. Mike lost his internet connection.
Untangle.
Let me see. I wonder if I can get him. Let me see if I can. Yeah. Let's see if we can make a connection to him. I'll ask him if I can. Can I call you? This might be an interesting experiment to bring. Andrew, the other day I called you from my via Skype from my Android phone. And I'll be honest with you, the call quality that I had you was better than calling my neighbor next door. I mean, it was just fabulous.
Scary.
Yeah, it was just – I mean, it was this good of quality, kind of like what I have for you right now. And and it was just – it was crazy good. So Skype on the Android device worked really well from that standpoint.
Cool.
All right. Let's see.
Now we got Mike back.
Is he back?
Yeah,
Mike?
I'm back.
All right.
He's back.
I thought maybe – did you actually –
It is not the super router. It is our cable provider.
Really?
So did it just go down? Your internet connection didn't get tangled.
Yeah, looking in super router, I can see the logs, and for a while there, I had 100% packet loss going on. So whatever was going on, turned off the router, turned it back on, turned off the modem, turned it back on. That didn't solve it. When it came back, it was still dropping packets. So I'm pretty sure it was a service provider problem.
Well, I think you might still have some catch up going on because you're breaking up to us. So
I'll just sit back.
Yeah, no, and we're getting ready to wrap things up here, guys. Anything else you want to cover before we kind of close this thing up? We've been on for a while, and it might be a good idea to wrap it up. Anything else?
The super cool Recognize Me software that you can run on your jailbroken iPhone that uses face recognition to unlock your phone now.
Really?
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and apparently the iPad too, because it's using the FaceTime camera.
And tell me again what it does.
It unlocks your phone using face recognition with the FaceTime camera.
Wow, that would be sweet.
Yeah, of course you have to be jailbroken.
Right.
But,
well, how long do you think before they support that natively?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know if that's really in Apple's interest or not, you know.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out because I have a twin brother, so we'll have to see if I can unlock his phone.
That's funny.
That is funny. Mike said he did pay his cable bill, probably because they sent it to you digitally, and it got stuck in your email maybe. Anyways.
Possible.
It looks like he's still struggling. Hey, one more thing I had. Microsoft, during the summer, Microsoft has extended an offer to students. So if you're buying a computer and you buy a PC that's $700 or more, you'll receive a free Xbox 360. That's the 4-gig console.
Pass it my way.
If you purchase, we'll throw that link in there. But and you can even – the offer is available to online shoppers who buy from Dell.com, HP.com, or Microsoft's online store. So those three. And that's about a $200 value. If you're going to buy a PC anyways for school next year, you can get yourself an Xbox 360 in the process.
Sweet.
All right, gents. Well, good show tonight. John, thanks for taking some extra time. I didn't think I was going to have Andrew tonight, so thank you for filling in on a pinch, and it's always good to have you on the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jim. Anytime. Yeah.
You bet. It's good to have you. Andrew, thanks for making the effort to get in here. I know you had business meetings and you were in the office, but finding a quiet corner to jump in. Thanks for joining us.
That's all good. I've got my weekly fix of podcasting.
Excellent. Man. Nice work, Christian. And I know you're anxiously looking forward to summer. And I think you got some good stuff. Hey, were we going to try and upgrade the Average Guy site, by the way?
Yeah, we are going to do that this weekend. Stay tuned, folks, because that's going to be cool. But B, when I'm back on my summer technology A train, you better watch out because this podcast is going to break the feed numbers. I'm telling you.
Now, really?
It's going to go wild. It's going to be a wildfire. It's going to spread across the nation.
I like it.
It's going to be just unstoppable.
I like the prediction. We will be down. The site will be down for some length of time, somewhere between 2 and 12 hours this weekend. That won't disrupt the feed. So if you're needing to download the podcast for any reason, you probably won't since you're listening to it, and I'm saying that. But if you did, the podcast is separate. So, Mike, I don't know if you're with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
You're good. Well, thank you for taking the time and all that time to walk us through the documentation, you know, the scanner stuff. That was excellent, and appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
I guess I'm going to have to listen to the tape show now, too, because I missed so much.
Yeah, you didn't miss too much, but we did lose you in the middle there, and you can go back and listen to it. I'll remind folks, we always like your comments and feedback on the show. If you'd send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, oftentimes I'll read those on the show when we get them. And if you have some suggestions about some topics you'd like covered, we'll take those as well. Of course, you can always reach us on Facebook if you just go to the search bar and type in after you've dual authenticated to it. If you just take and search for The Average Guy podcast, that'll take you to our page. And anytime we update a podcast, we update Facebook. Andrew always does the show notes. So if you haven't been over to The Average Guy site in a while, averageguy.tv, and check out the show notes. They are fantastic. Andrew, thanks for taking time to do that. We are always live on Ustream Thursday nights.
My pleasure.
Yeah, you bet. We're always live on Ustream 7 o'clock Central Time. Some nights we move that to 7:30, but appreciate those guys that are in chat and that join us live. And we do it every week on Ustream, averageguy.tv/live. Next week, Rich O'Neill is going to join us and will be the guest. And so you want to come out and have a listen to that live or join us on the podcast. Guys, have a great night, and we'll see you back here next week.
All right, guys, take care. Have a good night.
Have a good one. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Got a question
for you guys regarding getting your network connections pounded at the moment. We are getting smacked senseless at home from someone in Fort Lauderdale. Is it like spring break or something down there?
Is not for us up here. It's not.
Well, no, it'd be a little late for that.
That's funny, actually.
Okay.
Summer plans. Now, you're saying people looking for accommodations.
No, denial of service.
Oh,
my router.
DNS attacks from Fort Lauderdale, a bunch of old guys.
Yeah.
Going, I'm going to take them down.
Well, isn't there like a university community, a university population down there as well?
There is, yeah.
Because
it's
weird. It's there in China. China and Fort Lauderdale are belting my router every day, all day.
Really?
Yeah.
China and Fort Lauderdale. Those are not two locations I would have put together.
No, I mean, you can understand in India at the moment with the Microsoft, you know, hello, you've called, I'm calling from Microsoft scam.
Yeah.
But I had one of those. Oh, this is funny. I had one of them on the phone the other night. And he says to me, hello, I'm calling from Microsoft. We have identified a virus on your computer. And I said, I don't have a computer. And he goes, can you please just be pressing the start button?